We're going to wrap up our call with John from Pennsylvania about what he considers to be an angelic encounter. Phone lines are pretty much full. We'll get to as many of your calls as we can. Thanks for spending your time with us tonight. I'm George Knapp in for George Norrie, and this is Coast to Coast AM. John in Pennsylvania sharing with us a story of something that happened to him in the Miami area. John, a lot of folks on the phone, so I'm going to ask you to get to the meat of this story.
Going to get to it. I'm with this gentleman, and we go into this building, and he's looking around, and I didn't think about that, but later on I thought about it, and I thought, geez, this guy did he know what he was doing? So he says, oh, we go up these steps. So we go up a set of steps, go into an apartment, and something for me to eat. He was talking the whole time. He was smiling. I was feeling very comfortable with this man. I had been, getting very depressed, and I was very upset. And as a matter of fact, I had been thinking suicidal at the time when I met him. And I had started drinking again. I hadn't drank for over a year, and I started picking up drinking a little bit. Not much, but a little bit. So anyway, he says, I asked him his name. And he says, you can call me what you want. And I said, well, I don't know. He said, well, you can call me Miguel. I said, Miguel, okay. And he says, you need to call on and you need to go. And I said, okay. And there was a phone on the wall phone in the kitchen. And I said, can I use the phone? And he hesitated. He said, I don't think so. He said, I'll tell you what, there's a phone down at the corner. And when we at the outside the store. And we'd come around that corner, and there were a bunch of guys, maybe, 12 guys down there, enjoying themselves outside the store. And I said, I'm kind of a little bit afraid of going down there. I said, I don't fit in here. And he said, no problem. He says, I'll take you down. You go in there. I said, well, I don't have any money. He says, oh, gee, I don't have any money either. And I said, okay. So I go in. And he says, who are you going to call? I said, I don't know. And so I go on the phone. He says, well, you can call operator for nothing. Now, this is back in 99. I didn't have a cell phone. I don't know if they were even out at the time. So I turn my back on him. It was very, very noisy right there outside the store. I guess you could call it a bodega. And I went in the phone booth, and I called the operator. And the only thing I could think of, I said, well, I don't know anybody. I asked for AA. And she said, I'll give you that number, and you can call them. Now, I did call. They said, we'll send somebody down to pick you up. I said, wow, okay. I turn around, and there's nobody there. I mean, there's nobody there. All these guys that were at outside the store, outside the doorway, all these guys were, laughing and having a great time. Nobody's there. This gentleman, Miguel, he's nowhere to be seen. Nowhere around. And I didn't think a whole lot about it. Anyway, somebody came and picked me up and took me to the shelter, and I got back. I called a friend and got back to Pennsylvania, and I've been fine ever since. Never picked up another drink, though, I can tell you that. And it never hit me. A lot of the stuff that went on that day, how I trusted this guy just so implicitly, and the way he was talking to me, and the way he was not being overly friendly or anything. He was just being polite and smiling. And he did say to me at one point, he said something about my drinking, and I said, I haven't had anything to drink for a few days. And he says, okay, well, you don't do that again. And I said, okay. I said, how's this guy know this? How's this guy know all this stuff? Now, anyway, that was it.
Well, that's a pretty good story. I mean, the fact that all those guys.
I didn't think anything about it until, later on. I thought, was that an angel?
Well, maybe so. I mean, for all those guys to disappear, it's not that unusual for him to vanish while you're on the phone, but all the guys who are standing around there making a lot of noise, that's pretty weird for them to just vanish. John, I appreciate the call. Thank you very much. We're going to west of the Rockies, Michael in Big Sky, Montana. Hi, Michael.
Hey, George.
Good morning.
Great program tonight.
Thanks.
I was just calling. I heard the caller earlier, the guy from North Carolina. He said he had problems with, it sounds like sleep paralysis type deal.
Right.
And I was just going to, I had that happen to me when I was at a young age. And, it's kind of like whenever I would try to asked people about it, of course, nobody, you know, people are like, yeah, that just happened in your dream or whatever. But finally, I figured it out. Got in touch with this guy. He's a minister in Simi Valley, California. And he talked about it, and he said that he thought it was spiritual. And I've had that same thing happen to me a few times. But every time when it happens, I'll just kind of say a prayer in my head, and it's like it just goes away.
He said it was spiritual. How? Meaning it's good, bad, somewhere in between?
He said it was demonic. And he said the same thing had happened to him at a young age. And I don't know. I mean, there have been times when I've heard people talk about this phenomenon, and I wanted to call in. But finally tonight, I was just like, man, I know how this guy's feeling.
How many times do you think it's happened to you?
Probably, I'd say well over 20 times in my life. And it's scary for sure. And the way I felt was I couldn't move any part of my body. I could move my eyes. And it just, to me, it felt like there was this evil presence that was in my bedroom with me. And, you know, and growing up, I was somewhat spiritual. I went to church, but really didn't take things very seriously. But, you know, once I touched base with the minister, I can give out his website if you want. I don't know how y'all do that.
We're fine with it. Go ahead.
Okay. It's www.goodfight, all one word, .org, and it's Blessed Hope Chapel Ministry, and the name of the minister is he's a really, really good guy, down to earth. Joe Schimmel.
So after he told you how to handle these situations, how many more did you have, and did it always work that you got into a prayerful or contemplative state?
It's happened since I've had contact with him, but, you know, I guess it's just, when I pray, I guess the Holy Spirit comes over me or whatever, you know, like an angel or whatever, and it just, the feeling goes away. So,
Michael, can you think of anything you've done in your life to invite something like that in?
I guess, I don't know. I mean, I'm sensitive by nature. And I've heard this show enough times where it talks about people who are sensitive, you know, getting in touch with their spirit guides and so forth. And I don't know. I mean, I never really got into any of that. But like I say, I just kind of lived a normal life. I just kind of went through the motions with my faith. I never really had a prayer life, never really walk the walk, so to speak, as a Christian. And I'm not going to lie, man, I fall off the beaten path every so often. But I just, when I heard that guy talking, I could just tell. And I've heard others talk as well. And I know George Norrie has talked about how it being, he thought it was the old hag syndrome, I believe he said. But I'm fully convinced with my own experience that it's spiritual and that it's demonic.
Well, we appreciate you sharing the story. I'm glad that you found a way to deal with it. And I'm looking forward to hearing from others who are on the line to see if it's happened to them or if they've dealt with it in a similar way. I'm sure it was tough to tell us the story, Michael, but thank you for calling. Going to the wildcard line, Greg in Petaluma, California. Hi, Greg.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
First of all, I want to say that I think that Coast to Coast is one of the single most important radio shows in America today. Absolutely fabulous, fantastic. I come from a family that's very spiritual, very open-minded. My father was a hypnotherapist, healer, teacher, believed in the power of positive thinking, creative visualization, and kind of transforming your life that way. And I was always basically raised to have an open mind. And I just want to share with you just a brief story of an experience I had saving a friend of mine's life when I was a kid. We were about 13 years old, and we were standing at a bus stop, and my friend was leaning up against a pole that has all the signage and markings for the, you know, the bus that was about to arrive. And we saw, you know, the transit basically coming down the street. And I told my friend Barry to get off the pole. I said, Barry, the bus is going to crash into the pole. And I said, he's like looking at me like I'm crazy. And I'm like, no, 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 come on. And I pulled his jack and I got him off the pole. And the bus came down and careened and slammed into the pole, breaking the windshield, breaking off the mirror of the bus. And I mean, this is a public transport vehicle, and it was just, it literally crashed into the pole. Just one of those psychic moments, clairvoyant moments.
I think maybe we all have that to some extent, and yours popped up at exactly the moment you needed it to pop up there. Has it happened since?
Yeah, I've had a number of other experiences. You know, when I just feel if we let our sort of higher self open up, if we find meditative times to be quiet inside, it, basically what I'm saying is when we can find a time where we eliminate the psychic turbulence, you know, rushing around, thinking about work, the kids, the things to do, etc., we sort of shut down our third eye. But if we find times in our life when we can just sort of tune in, I feel like the universe speaks to us, and we have opportunities to sort of raise our antenna, as it were, and just kind of communicate, you know, with information and possibilities. One comment I'd like to make for the genius that called in with free energy. There's a multiple ways of dealing with cancer now. One of them is a doctor in Italy who's now curing cancer, various forms of baking soda or sodium bicarbonate. Definitely look into that. My sister was diagnosed with ovarian cancer, and she's actually completely cured herself with these well-crafted mushrooms that they're now cultivating in Germany. Cancer is a fungus, and there's ways to address it. So I just wanted to.
Greg, appreciate the call. Thanks for sharing the story, and thanks for sharing that advice. I'm sure Buck is still listening and could take it under advisement. Thanks very much. Carolyn in Washington State. Hi, Carolyn.
Hi, George. I've been wanting to talk to you specifically. You're the one who wrote the book about Skinwalker Ranch, right?
Yes.
I didn't read it yet, but I wanted to tell you of an experience that I had with an actual shapeshifter.
Let's hear it.
Okay. I was hanging out my daughter's diapers, cloth diapers. It was probably about 4 degrees outside, and I was in New Mexico. And my husband, who's Native American, had 2 Native American friends over, guys. And so I was going out, and it was like, probably 1 o'clock in the morning. I was hanging out the diapers, and they would just freeze instantly as I would hang them. I'd just barely get them hung up, and they'd be solid ice. And then in about an hour, you'd go out and they're all soft and dry. They would just go through a sublimation process and never, you know, just totally, it would evaporate from a frozen state. Anyway, so the moon was out and I just walked over. So I was out of the shade of this salt cedar tree. So I could just look at it kind of a clear view. And under this tree was this absolutely just huge, like a Hereford steer. And there were fences all around. The whole land around, I was in this little village, was just like fenced off into kind of like little grazing lots. And so I look at this Hereford, and he's down, like squatted down on all fours like cattle get, and he has this massive head. I mean, it's about 28 inches long and about 18 inches across between the eyes. And I'm like, there's something wrong with this steer or bull. There's something wrong with this animal. He's not right. So I walk up to him and I just say, you get out of here. You do not belong here. You need to leave now. So he gets up real slow, like they have to get up on, you know, unbend their legs. He trots off. He jumps over the fence that's maybe, 15 yards going across the back part of the yard. And then he's over in this next kind of a feed, not a feedlot, but a lot fenced off also. And he starts running and he's just loping. As he clears the next fence, he turns into a wolf. And I see him continuing to run up the hill as a wolf. And I'm just standing there going, oh my gosh, what happened? I'd never heard of shapeshifters at all at that point. So I go back inside, and I'm telling my husband and his two friends what I've just seen, and I'm just like, oh, my gosh, this is just unbelievable. And they're saying, they get all quiet, and they say, you just saw a shapeshifter. They are really dangerous. You know what you're supposed to do when you see them? And I go, I have no idea. And they said, you're supposed to do exactly what you did. How did you know that? I said, I don't know. I just knew that there was something way wrong with him and that he shouldn't be around my family. And so I told him to leave. And they all three of them said, that's exactly what you have to do. And you have to not show any fear at all. And that's still, I mean, I'm getting chill bumps just relaying the story. And this was just amazing. But I thought you might be interested because of your experiences.
Well, I'm very interested in it. I've had no personal experiences, but in working with Dr. Colm Kelleher, who co-authored that book you're talking about, mm-hmm. he had a whole team of people that worked very hard to win the confidence and trust of Native Americans up there, the Ute tribe in northeastern Utah. He also worked extensively in New Mexico, mm-hmm. trying to win the confidence of the Jicarilla Apache and right. others. Heard a lot of stories about skinwalkers, but always off the record. And I've tried to get information from a variety of tribes, Navajo and Hopi, and you're always met with the same reaction. Nobody wants to talk about it. I'm curious about how willing your husband has been to talk about it, not only that night, but any time since.
We talked about it several times, but then he passed away. So I've been a widow for quite a few years.
What tribe was he? What tribe?
Pueblo.
Had he ever talked to you about shapeshifters before your experience?
No, not at all. And that's why the three of them were so amazed, because I'm just barely any Native American. And I had lived on a reservation in Arizona, and I'd taught school at an Indian school, but I had never heard anything about this. No stories, nobody mentioning it. And I certainly just thought that this was the oddest looking, steer that I had ever seen. And I've, been around cattle and stuff, and it was just wrong. You know, you could just tell this is something's the matter here. Something's not right. It's not good. So,
Carolyn, the hair is raising on my arm as well. I appreciate you sharing that story. I'll have some other comments on the other side of the break. Thank you very much for calling in. Phone line's pretty much full. We'll get to your calls and more after this on Coast to Coast AM. That call from Carolyn about shapeshifters and skinwalkers really brought back some memories for me of chasing these stories down. And I'll tell you, in the cold, harsh daylight, it's easy to dismiss those kinds of stories as Native American superstitions, somehow just quaint stories you tell around the campfire. But I can tell you that the Native Americans take them very seriously, and that there are some witnesses who are non-Native Americans who have seen these kinds of transformations that I have interviewed. And it's pretty hard to dismiss the stories outright based on the quality and credibility of the witnesses that I've talked to over the years. Going back to the phone lines, a lot of folks on there with their stories. We'll get to as many as we can right after this on Coast to Coast AM. We enter our final segment of the evening. I'm George Knapp in tonight for George Norrie. Got to tell you, folks, these are good calls, good stories, good accounts. Appreciate you bringing your A game here tonight. We're going to Joshua in Albuquerque. Hi, Joshua.
Yes, sir. How are you doing tonight?
Okay. What's on your mind?
Well, I have this experience that's been happening to me since it's been about 3 years now that it's been happening. And I don't know what it is, but I'm laying in bed at night, and all of a sudden there's something very, very evil feeling that comes over my body, and I'm paralyzed. I cannot move. I cannot talk. The only thing I can do is open my eyes, and he comes out of the bathroom, whatever it is, it comes out of the bathroom, and it starts to come up to the corner of the bed, and it doesn't pass the corner of the bed. It never comes past the corner of the bed, but I can see him, and it's this dark figure, and I don't know what it is, but it scares the holy crap out of me. And now that I have a girlfriend, and now I moved in with her, and I've always told her that I've had these dreams or whatever they are. And the other night, about about 3 weeks ago, I was laying in bed, and it started to, whatever it is, it just came right over me, and it was very evil. And she said that my body was like started twitching really bad and like almost like I was having a seizure. And I can't talk to it, but I tell it, in the name of Jesus, I rebuke you, and it goes away.
And does your girlfriend see anything when this is happening?
No.
Other than you?
She just, I remember her telling me, hold on, I got you. Don't, you know, you're okay. Because it's very, very scary to me, whatever is happening. And I tell it, in the name of Jesus, I rebuke you, and it goes away. And it usually happens about 3 times a month, and it's been happening for about 3 years now. And it started in my grandmother's house, which is kind of a weird house in the first place, because from what I understand, she used to mess around with the Ouija board and stuff. And now that she passed away, we always try to look for it, and we never find it. You know, maybe she threw it away or something, but, like, it's just weird that, you know, the caller from North Carolina and your other callers talk about it. Whatever it is, it's demonic, and it's very, very frightening. Like, I don't know. It's hard for me to talk about it. You know what I mean?
I do know what you mean. Now, you're awake when this is happening because you're talking to her. You can sort of see it out of the corner of your eye, but she can't see it.
You know, she cannot see it. And she's like, well, I don't know what it is. But see, what's weird is her sister's room is next to ours. And before I moved in, she had bought this mirror. And she would wake up at night, and her body would start contorting. And her mother is Catholic, so they're Catholic. And she would run in with the holy water and everything, and whatever it was would go away right away. You know what I mean? And, like, so they got rid of the mirror. I think they took it to a flea market or whatever and sold it. But, like, I hear these stories about this happening to people all the time, and it's like, I'm wondering what it is, you know?
Well, I can't answer that for you, but you described it, though. You said he came out of the bathroom. You think it's a he?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it just, to me, it seems evil. Like, I don't know if a woman could be that evil or what, but it's evil, whatever it is. You know, I don't know if it's an entity or if it's alien, but it feels like it's demonic because when I tell it in the name of Jesus, it goes away.
Well, and as you probably know, in the alien abduction field, there are a lot of people who report similar experiences. They think it's something alien. But you know what? When you get down to the brass tacks, what the heck is the difference? Alien, demonic? I mean, I don't think we really know what the heck it might be.
I think you're right, you know? Because it's like, it's just the feeling that I get, I can't explain almost. It's like the most scariest feeling I've ever had in my life. Like, you know, and I've always like, well, what if I say something and someone's like, you're crazy, you know what I mean? So I really don't talk about it. My mom knows about it. And my fiance, and that's basically it. And now everybody else, but I just wanted to let people know that, you know, it is, that does occur, you know, and just try to hold on. Cause like, it's like, I don't know. It's like, I can fight it when it starts to come towards me. I just fight it. And I tell it to go away in the name of Jesus. And basically it does. So people who don't know what to do now, maybe they try that. If it happens again, maybe it'll help them.
Joshua, thank you for sharing the story and the advice. I would suggest you have a conversation, though, with your fiance, because if her sister has been having sort of possession-type experiences that you described, seems like you need to talk that one out and find out how long that's been going on. Thanks for the call. Red in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Hi, Red.
How are you doing, George?
Okay, good morning.
Good morning to you. I've got a couple of little experiences I'd like to bounce off you that happened a while back. One of them is in Florida. I was working security for a place called the Beach Cove, which is no longer there. It was a couple miles north of Ball Harbor in Miami Beach.
Right.
And, I did special event security. I've been up on stage doing security for several celebrities at concerts and things. But this was basically a hotel, a resort. They had a lot of teen problems during the summertime with gang members from Hialeah, things like that. Well, one night I was out there doing my patrols, and I looked out there, and a boat is right behind the beach cove. And this is kind of funny. I go out there to investigate, and the boat had algae in it where water had been about a foot deep. And obviously it had been in the water for maybe a year, because I was into biology. I know how long it takes for that stuff to grow. there was empty water bottles that were in the boat. I followed procedure. I called Metro Dade. Metro Dade came out. We did a little investigation, and, well, they were shaking their heads just like me. They said, well, whoever was in it probably didn't make it. It's kind of like a little ghost ship experience. We both postulated that it was probably some people coming up over from Cuba in little boats, and maybe they got out in the Sargasso out there where there's no wind at or something, and maybe it sat out there for a long time. Nobody found them, and there was nobody in it. And
that's what I was thinking, is maybe refugees trying to get to America or something, but there was nobody there. I mean, couldn't they have just have abandoned it or,
swam ashore? Yeah, well, that happens all the time. I mean, it was on the news all the time over there. But this one was unusual because this boat had been in the water. You could tell it had been in the water for, like, 6 months or a year. So if it was out in the middle of the ocean that long, those people probably didn't make it. And it was empty water bottles. There wasn't any water in any of the bottles. They had rum bottles and empty bottles from Cuban, like, rum and things. And there was not a stitch of water in it. So I'm just wondering what happened to the people. I'm thinking maybe they didn't make it.
That's a sad story. You didn't have a sort of a general feeling there was something else going on, something
Well, I had a feeling. I mean, that's the corner of the Bermuda Triangle right there. And I sit out there at night when in the wintertime when we didn't have such a big gang problem and it was mainly a lot of tourists, and just looked at the ocean and wondered a lot. I've been involved in a lot of things like that. I was involved in a couple of psychophysiological experiments back in the early 80s. I was really too young to be like in a research project, but I'm sure you know Dr. John Lilly.
I know the name. No, I don't know him personally.
Okay, well, his protege, Dr. Jay Shirley, they're the ones that actually the movie Altered States was based on.
Oh.
And I was about 17 years old, and I had a real high IQ. And don't ask me how I got into the bodyguard work, the security. This kind of life happened. But I used to converse with Dr. Jay Shirley all the time, and he was involved in a lot of experiments and stuff back in the late 60s and things. That's why I wanted to tell you a dream that I had that's really didn't have any meaning at the time. But in 1990, I was working security at the time in the Southeast. It was really bad. It was a bad neighborhood. We did security for a lot of big-time people like LL Cool J. I was on the stage. I did security for Tupac. We had a shooting at one of the places that I worked at. So a lot of dangerous things were happening at the time. I had a dream that this aerial object was it was roundish, and it was flying along, and it tried to basically shoot me. I had like a submachine gun attached to it, and it tried to shoot me. I jumped up out of the bed. I was in martial arts for several years, so I kind of did like as if someone was really trying to attack me in real life. I did a somersault out of the bed. I woke up, I realized I was dreaming and everything, but this aerial object was trying to shoot me. And it didn't really have any significance at the time until about 10 years later when all of the drone activity came about. And I just thought that was kind of interesting.
Red, I appreciate the story. That would love to know more about that ghost boat. That seems pretty spooky. Appreciate the call. Christina in New York on the Wild Card Line. Hi, Christina.
Oh, hi. Good morning. Thanks
hi, good
for
morning.
Getting me in here.
Sure.
I do want to share a metaphysical thing that happened to me, but first I wanted to give a message to our dear Mr. Henderson, who called earlier. Thank you for your call, and we need people like you on the planet, so I'm not willing to let you go without a fight. I wanted to recommend that you secure a book called The ESSIAC Report. That's ESSIAC, The ESSIAC Report by Richard Thomas. You can get it any online source. And ESSIAC is an herbal tonic. A lot of people have used it to cure their own cancers, Dr. Charles Brush, who was Kennedy's personal physician, used it and, you know, researched it. It's not snake oil. What the previous caller was talking about was a book by Dr. Simon Sini, Cancer is a Fungus. That's based on the premise that cancer can only grow in acidic bodies. The body has to be acidic, low oxygen, low potassium for cancer to grow. So he has methods of getting baking soda into the body to help achieve that.
Okay. But, well, thank you for that advice.
Okay. If you want to hear the metaphysical story.
Please.
Okay. Well, it was after one of your shows, or during one of your shows, or Mr. Nori's shows, on the spirit box, the box they used to talk to people who have died. I was kind of falling asleep during the show, and I remember thinking briefly, you know, well, hey, Dad, you know, maybe you can talk to me without this box. Let's see what we can do. So the next morning, I was not awake. I was kind of in that vague twilight, and I heard this really loud thump. It sounded like a big hardcover, you know, heavy book falling in the other room. So I was, you know, still laying in bed thinking, oh, God, what happened? The ceiling caved in. What's going on there? And I had a dressmaker's dummy at the foot of my bed, and I had a habit of pinning odds and ends onto it. And whenever I did that, I always pinned it with two pins going in at opposing angles so it wouldn't fall. There was nothing, no books, nothing fell. The only thing that I saw was about 5 feet away from the dressmaker's dummy, in the middle of a round rug in the exact center, there were two objects that had been on the dummy. One of them was a rosary. The other one was one of my father's mailing labels. And I do not remember ever pinning it on, but there it was with still two pins in it, you know, both fully in it and both still going opposite directions. So, you know, it could not have just been pulled out. And, you know, that was always very perplexing.
Wow, that's what your father was deceased at that point?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So is it him? What's your explanation for that?
Well, I think it's something connected to him. There were a lot of very strange events that happened immediately after he passed away and around the funeral.
Like what?
Briefly, the evening it was the end of April, the evening he passed away, it started, there was an absolute freak snowstorm, huge flakes nonstop for 3 or 4 days until the day of the funeral. The snowstorm was only in about a 2-mile range around our house and around the funeral parlor. Family members who lived like 5 miles away were stunned. They had blue skies, you know, not a flake, and we were just in the middle of this blizzard. The day of the funeral, it had finally just stopped snowing, barely. The roads were still really bad, so we were going to be leaving together afterwards. I was in the first car waiting for some other family members to pull their cars up in back of us, and there was a long, winding driveway as the exit. All of a sudden, there was this giant goose in the exact center of the road, about exactly one car length in front of us. And, you know, we tried honking the horn. It wouldn't move. The goose started marching in place. It would, you know, march and then turn over and look at us and then turn forward and march a little more. And, you know, it actually was like gesturing with its head, like, come on, come on. So my sister said, well, we better do what it says. And she started the car. So this goose puffed itself up so big, and it led us down. It marched us down the entire length of this long, winding driveway in the exact center of the road, just marching at a slow pace. And when it got to the bottom of the road, right before the main street, it turned around and looked at us, and I don't know how else to explain it. It like gave a Broadway-worthy bow, and then it just took a few hops to the side, and it disappeared.
Was that Dad? You think that was Dad just saying goodbye?
Either him or he sent an emissary. He wanted a good send-off. I have no explanation. It was the freakiest thing.
Well, it made you feel good, though, in some way.
Oh, yeah, because it was, difficult circumstances around his passing. So, between the blizzard and the goose, we were, distracted enough. And, there was also, I had taken a picture off of the back patio of the snow accumulation. And when I got it developed, the snow, photographed normally, but it looked like Lawrence Welk's bubble machine. It was just covered, the entire picture was covered in bubbles. So I know people, commonly say that may be angels.
I don't know, but the goose story is an excellent one. Christina, thanks for calling in. I appreciate it. A lot of folks still on the line. Sorry we couldn't not get to your calls. Want to thank Dan and Tom and Sean and all the crew there at Premier. George Norrie will be back soon, as will I, in a week or so. Good night, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. This has been Coast to Coast AM.